Management Part 2.
So I've seen other residents use TXA. I haven't used it before, but I also heard of other topical hemostatics. Do you know how useful they are or what else we could try?
Janelle brings up an excellent point. The use of TXA, which is currently an off-label use for epistaxis, but there is some good data to support this. And while there's not a ton of data, it looks like it may stop the bleeding sooner, have a lower incidence of re-bleeding, and patients are able to be discharged sooner. So how do you actually do this? You take a pledget, you soak it in TXA, and you basically do an anterior pack with this soaked TXA pledget, and you leave it in there until the bleeding stops.
Yeah, actually, I think it's a pretty good idea. I don't think there's much risk to it. And of course, when you keep saying TXA, just to remind everyone, it's tranexamic acid that we're talking about.
Thank
you. We just use a sexy acronym.
I know, it does sound
and
cool.
I think for the patients, Jess, that have bleeding disorders, that you're concerned about one of these underlying issues, it's probably a good idea to do this in advance. It might make the procedure a little bit safer, but you know, the evidence is not solid.
So how do you know if your anterior packing is working?
Well, that's a good question. So that's, of course, the name of the game here is to stop the bleeding. And so after you've put in the anterior packing, it might take a few minutes, actually, until things expand and seal. So don't jump to conclusions right away. Give it a little bit of time. But generally speaking, once that bleeding stops, when they're sitting up, they'll tell you that they no longer feel blood streaming down the back of their throat. You won't see any blood yourself when you look in their throat, and it won't be pouring out the front. And so that's when you've known that it's stopped. And it's probably a good idea in that first area after you insert the nasal tampon to watch them for a while closely to see if what needs to be happening is happening. Is this bleeding stopping?
So let's say we've done one anterior pack on one side, the side that we think is the source of the bleeding, and it hasn't stopped. So going through your algorithmic approach, the next step is?
Well, remember, these are patients that we didn't localize the bleeding. We didn't really see what was going on. We're kind of trying to occlude these areas or tamponade them one after another to rule out any potential source. And so if one nasal tampon hasn't done the trick, a second one goes in the other side. And the combined effect of occluding both spaces, tamponading both spaces, as well as putting that bilateral pressure on the septum, where most of the bleeding is coming from, will often stop the bleeding if it hasn't stopped already.
So if you've got a patient who has a bilateral anterior nasal packing, how is that changing their disposition?
Well, you know what? Everything that I said earlier about the older, vulnerable patient that's got other comorbidities with a single pack, that doubles my concern. Now you've got a patient who can't breathe through their nose at all often. I mean, sometimes they can if they've got the type of pack that has the tube through it, but let's not get into the minutiae. You've got two big things sticking out of the nose and into the posterior pharynx, and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should underemphasize to people that, you know, it doesn't mean you can't send people home that are young and otherwise healthy, but just be careful about that. It's an airway issue, and sometimes these patients will desat, especially if they've got sleep apnea, these types of things. They need to be observed in a monitored environment.
So in addition to changing their disposition, if they're still bleeding at this point, then what's the next step in your algorithm?
Hopefully, most of your patients are going to stop bleeding if you've got two properly packed anterior nares. But yes, it happens. And remember, about 5% of these, 10% of these bleeds are these dreaded posterior bleeds that might not yet have stopped. And so the technique at this point, getting some help, to be honest, I mean, I think that even for people that have been through this several times, it's probably good to start thinking about backup at this point in time. The ENT surgeon is much more likely to get involved and help you out this time acutely. But the algorithm continues that after the double anterior packs don't work, you basically go back to step one. You kind of got to get all that stuff out of there. And then you're going to clean the nose again and do a posterior pack. Because a posterior pack, Jess, can only be placed first before anterior pack. So if you do get down this far into the algorithm, everything does need to come out. And then the first thing that then goes in after that is a posterior pack.
So walk us through the steps for placing a posterior pack.
So a posterior pack for me, for most of my career, was basically a Foley catheter, a urinary catheter. And now there's much better and fancier devices that combine both a posterior and an anterior pack. But in its purest form, what a posterior pack is a balloon in the very back of the nasopharynx where it comes together as one, the very posterior aspect of the nasopharyngeal airway. And so after everything comes out, you insert the Foley catheter or equivalent, and you basically put it all the way in. Remember, you're tickling airway at this point. You could be tickling structures that are going to make them hypoxic, and so you've got to think about the airway at this point in time. I want airway equipment at the bedside. I want oxygen. That's important here, monitoring. And then once you put that posterior Foley balloon in, you inflate the balloon something in the neighborhood of 5 to 10 cc's, okay, you're going to put in. And
With air.
Not with saline.
Not saline.
Because then it can, if it ruptures, yep, it drips back into their airway. And you want to gently pull that forward, and you're titrating that actually, Jess. You're titrating it to the stopping of the bleeding. And so you can actually be pulling gently forward with this inflated balloon on the back of their airway. And as you're doing that, you can actually see the blood will stop dripping down the back of their throat. That's ideally how this is done.
That sounds incredibly uncomfortable.
It does. And so one of the things that I always emphasize when I'm talking about this is, if you need to intubate a patient, if this is living hell for them and they're bleeding and you're stressed out, it may be a good idea before you get down this far into the algorithm to secure the airway and to sedate the patient so that the rest of this can happen a little more comfortably.
So anyone who's gone down this far in the algorithm is a sick patient. It's someone who you should already be trying to involve ENT or whichever specialist you have access to where you work. And this is someone who needs to be admitted.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, remember, this patient might have multiple lines. They might have blood products running at the same time. This could be like a 3-alarm fire. And also remember that posterior packing, like we're describing it, is just a temporizing measure. And so in more and more facilities, what we're going to find is that the ENT people are going to come in and do more advanced procedures. They're going to do actual endoscopic ligations of arteries and other advanced procedures that can make things safer for this patient and obviate the need for them to be in this vulnerable situation with all this packing in them.
There's a lot of devices here. We're going to go through them on MRAP HD, but the key things is you've tried all the other things. You tried pinching the nose, you tried getting all the boogers out, you tried doing sort of some cautery of any bleeding points, but you couldn't find any. You packed them anteriorly. None of that worked. Now you're going to pack them posterior. This is a very dangerous situation. Posterior packing is associated with some bad things. It's time for the experts here. So if you're an expert, good. If you're not, get help. And often intubation is required here because this is tickling the airway, as they talked about. And I keep saying packing because I'm old school, and it's really, you've put in anterior packing devices, or you've put in a posterior pressure device, or you're going to put in a posterior pressure device. That's what I mean by packing.
So in addition to making the bleeding stop, one of the things we also have to think about is anticoagulation. Is the patient on anticoagulation, as our patient is in this case? So if they're on warfarin, this makes things a lot more simple for us in many ways because we have a therapeutic window, we know what their number should be, and we also have a reversal agent. So if they're having a serious bleed and they are on warfarin, this is someone who you're reversing. If they're sick enough that they're getting a posterior pack or you're transfusing them, they need to be reversed. You're doing vitamin K, you're considering PCC or FFP, depending on what's available to you and the patient's comorbidities. If their INR is elevated, say it's in the 5 to 9 range, but you are able to get the bleeding to stop with an anterior pack, now we're in a gray area. Some hospitals have different protocols for how exactly you manage this. But in general, you want to consider holding their warfarin and rechecking their INR versus possibly lowering their dose and maybe a small dose of vitamin K. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no one size fits all. I mean, you have to consider the patient, their factors involved with why they're on anticoagulation in the first place. How bad is the bleeding? You don't have to reverse every little bleed. But on the other hand, if someone is really bleeding and you can't stop it, it's very difficult to criticize the clinician for reversing whatever they need to reverse.
It's also important to remember that if they are on warfarin and their INR is in the therapeutic window and you can get the bleeding to stop, you're done. You treat this patient like anyone else.
Yeah.
They're on it for a reason.
That's true. And again, there might be some exceptions to that if they live very far away and they're going home and you're a little bit more worried. So, you know, individualize every case. But yes, in general, a lot of people get totally reversed. It didn't have to be if there were minor bleeds that stopped. I agree.
Now we're going to get into an area that's a lot more gray, a lot more uncomfortable, the novel oral anticoagulants.
I think we can start calling them the not so novel anymore.
Not
oral
so
anticoagulants.
Novel.
Like, yeah,
how long did they get that title?
Yeah, exactly. I think that they've abused the privilege of being novel now because it's been several years that we've had these agents, but everyone knows the problems with these agents is that they're wonderful in terms of dosing and convenience and you don't need to monitor them, but some of them are not easy to reverse and that can be very stressful when someone's got ongoing bleeding.
So for most of these, data has yet to show what exactly we should do to reverse them. But in general, with what we know now, if someone is bleeding severely enough that you are going to try to reverse them, the best thing that we know of so far is PCC.
Yes, and of course, that's the, what does that stand for again?
Prothrombin complex concentrate.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, that's something that we would basically try on most patients. It doesn't work on all of them. The other thing is dabigatran, which has been around for longer. Most of these agents actually can be dialyzed off. And so that sometimes is a consideration in these patients. But again, if you get the nosebleed to stop, you're not necessarily altering their coagulation regimen.
Right.
You're not necessarily having to adjust that. And one thing that we didn't mention, in addition to anticoagulant agents, are antiplatelet agents. So that's aspirin and clopidogrel. And those agents, it's a little less clear. We don't really have a good way of reversing those. Certainly, you're not going to continue them on a patient who you're admitting for ongoing bleeding. But you may, in some cases, end up consulting with a hematologist. If it's a really bad case, it won't stop. But, you know, we don't really have good reversals for those, unfortunately.